chapter 2, the other change on the philosophical situation of alternative movements. Quoting Robert Musil's The Enthusiasts, "One man is a fool, two are a new humanity." Every age has its own style of being dissatisfied with the world, and every dissatisfaction that becomes self-conscious contains within it the seeds of a culture. Today's dissatisfaction with the world shows unmistakable traits of panic. Those who do not sense the panic are not up to speed. Presumably they live off-site in an asynchronous cave, having been sparing themselves any exertion, living on a private income, perhaps happy as well, transported into a province out of reach from the news. To avoid panic, one would have to trust one's small good fortune. One would have to have the old psychological immune system that uses immediate worries to protect itself from big questions. But immunity to panic is rare nowadays, as is any believable unworldliness. Whoever reads the newspaper and eats mushrooms is already contaminated. Even those who are constructive-minded can get no further than a little bit of positivity against a panicked background. Goodwill no longer has a common denominator with the course of the world. All of this says that panic is not a symptom of mass hysteria, nor does it present a personal case of the nerves. Speaking in classical terms, it is a constitution of the objective spirit, articulating an adequate relationship of the intellect to the matters at hand. And should the spirit lose its composure at what it discovers, it is right in this matter. It is the same with the panicked spirit as it is with Lessing's Father Galotti. If you don't lose your mind over some things, then you have no mind to lose. Panic proves to be the obligatory way of being of a consciousness that delves into its time, into our time. And that is why panic cannot be adopted or discarded like an external code. The possibility of inciting or appeasing it being illusory. The possibility of inciting or appeasing it being illusory. Its very nature is to be beyond manipulation because it is older than all calculation. Ultimately, panic is not born of scaremongering, but the other way around. In panic, we discover a fundamental feature of the truth about the present historical moment, and even more so an aspect of the truth about the brittle historicity of contemporary existence. If we are gripped by panic, then it has become clear to us that historical time dies with us, in such a way that at its end, barely anything will have happened. Our history, all that we are and have, will one not too distant day not have anyone for whom it is something that has happened. That is why panic arises. And insofar as it arises, it is the intelligent tinge of the moment in which we realise how time trickles away for us into the realm of might as well have never been. Into the realm of might as well never have been. Something would only have happened to us if a future exists that retains its past, our present, as its origin. Such retention has been the great work of the civilizational imagination, which ensured that what has been remained has happened, quote unquote, remain as happened. To remain as having happened means to enter into memories. But since we cannot rule out the absence of a future that remembers us, panic seeps into the signature of the present time as an inevitable feature of it. Before the panicked worldview, the entire historical context disintegrates, and the usual impermanence of things suddenly turns into a panicked impermanence. It is as if a black hole appeared in time, into which all that has happened within time disappears. Vertigo in the background, a tear in the film of representations, a flavour of unreality and emptiness, and panic is the form in which the end times are there, for the insightful zeitgeist from now on. Put simply, panic is the post-Christian, neo-pagan version of the apocalypse. It arrives at the same time as the re-actualization of Greek motifs from the ancient fund and occupies the space left open by the receding Judeo-Christian interpretations of the last things. Ever since time has run out for historical messianism, the bell of panicked worldly experience is tolled once more. This explains why today's style of dissatisfaction with the world can be nothing other than a panicked one. What is not explained, however, is whether a panicked consciousness that pushed through to self-affirmation could be the stylistic principle of a post-Christian culture. Even less is said about the question of whether the movements that present themselves as alternatives contain enough mental substance and lifestyle to bring about an alternative culture from their new attitude to the world, in which the attitudes to life and interpretations of being human would take shape for the coming millennium. Only one thing is certain. The macabre undertone in the phrase panicked culture is not without reason. This undertone not only insinuates the shift from religious apocalypse to post-religious panic, but it also foreshadows with an uncomfortable realism the coming era as a kind of earthly purgatory, where sinners who can still be rescued must undergo dire courses of treatment. For one can only describe the due learning processes of the kind found at the level of great social and political systems in terms of a diabolical autodidacticism. In this view, the historically moved planet appears to be something between hell and adult education, where the poor souls have to memorize the conditions for their own survival through a disastrous self-study. In connection with these scandalous reflections, we engage those employed at the alternative front in a historical conversation. Why? Because it must be shown how the most militant dissatisfactions with the actual have a share in the very old history of dissatisfaction with the state of earthly affairs. The current alternatives are, to some extent, the partners, and to some extent the heirs of epochal alternative movements whose beginnings date back to the rise of advanced civilizations. Consequently, today we are dealing not only with trivial efforts to reform bad global conditions, such as fill the history books, but also with a completely newly constructed and organized alternative to a previous alternative movement. Ecologists, autonomists, fundamentalists, the neo-religious, green pacifists, all of them get caught up in a very distant history of revolts and revolutions, where an older dissatisfaction with the world has already created its classical expression of it. To positively define the philosophical locus of today's alternatives, we must distinguish between two kinds of alternativity. The first, or metaphysical, type of disagreement with the world, which aims for transcendent beyond worlds or utopian counterworlds, and the second, or poetic, type of disagreement with the world, which sees the track that shows the way out in reality itself. The second or poetic type of disagreement with the world, which sees the track that shows the way out in reality itself.